It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. On this episode, we're joined by Sui Lang Pinoke. She is a Senior Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Utah-based Zions Bank. And she has an amazing story. And I had a chance to speak with her and kind of get introduced to her on a story I was doing regarding diversity in the workplace. And before we get into that, I want to have Sui Lang, could you do me a favor and kind of tell us about you and your background and how you came to be in this position as the DEI, I guess, advocate for Zions Bank.
Well, thank you, Jason, so much for the invitation to join you in this conversation. I'm floored that you actually find my story interesting.
No, fascinating is the word I would use.
I really appreciate that. So I guess a little bit about my background. I'm originally from the beautiful islands of Hawaii. So I was born in Honolulu, raised here in Salt Lake City, and living as a woman of color, being raised in a place like Salt Lake City, Utah, it's very eye-opening, being surrounded by white people and primarily operating. I developed a passion for politics early on. Just recognizing the disparities that existed amongst women, people of color, and young people in the political arena. And I studied political science at the University of Utah, where I oftentimes describe that experience as single-handedly representing the woman, the minority, the progressive point of view in all my political science classes. But I also, one of the greatest benefits that I received from that experience was I had a lot of older white men, conservative and progressive, invest heavily in my development, serving as mentors, as professors, colleagues, and friends. And that really helped kind of shape and form my ideology, perspectives, self-image, and view of the world, right, as I continued pursuit of my career. So I studied political science there at University of Utah, then moved back east to Washington, D.C. for grad school, where I lived on Capitol Hill for 13 years. I studied at American University's Women in Politics Institute. And so the majority of my work in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space has been in the political arena, getting more women, people of color, and young people elected to public office and engaging in the political process. And so I moved back to Utah about, I would say, 3.5 years ago, and I had no plan. It was for personal reasons, for my daughter. She wanted to do her high school education here. And I found myself doing a lot of diversity, equity, and inclusion work in the corporate arena. And it was very interesting coming back as an adult and as a professional, being raised here in a place like Utah, then experiencing the breadth and depth of diversity that exists in a place like Washington, D.C., and then coming back to the Beehive State. It was very eye-opening. In doing this work. What I appreciate about the Beehive State right now is there's a high need for diversity, equity, inclusion work. And simply because of the demographics that exist here, right? But I see a strong desire to learn, a strong desire to listen and learn and lead in very mindful and inclusive ways. I will admit I was kind of dragging my feet coming back to Utah 3.5 years ago. But as I opened up my mind to embracing a state like Utah, building connections, establishing relationships, seeking opportunities to grow and to serve, right, our local communities and local leaders here, I've quickly began to feel like home again, you know, and I have three homes. Hawaii is one of them. Utah is one of them. And Washington, D.C. is the third. And as vastly different as those regions and areas of our country are, if someone like me can feel like home in those different areas, we can each build a home no matter where we are, right? And when I use that term home, I mean that sense of belonging, that sense of safety, of trust that surrounds us. And so no matter where we are, no matter where we live, what community, no matter where we work, right? Because oftentimes our jobs are our homes for significant periods of time in our lives. It's up to us to build that sense of identity, adapting, being flexible, finding ways to align our values with the organization's values, things like that. And so these are a lot of lessons that I have learned over the years in doing this work. And it really is deep work, and it starts at the individual level. And what helps is exposure, exposure, exposure. And I cannot say that enough. And so that's one thing I feel is of high need here in Utah is exposure. You know, people mean well. They don't mean to offend. They don't mean to be ignorant, you know, and not in a negative way. They just simply have not been exposed to something different. And so when you don't have that exposure, it tends to lead to fear of or people are always a little hesitant with the unfamiliar. And so I see a lot of my role here in the community, and especially in this new role here at Zions Bank, is to provide that exposure to people.
Interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, it really is. And I guess when you talk about this work, would you just drill down a little bit on that, the idea of work? Because I think one of the things that we all have to get more comfortable with is this idea that we all have, innate and sometimes chosen biases and prejudices. And it's our responsibility to understand those better so that we don't make people uncomfortable, even unintentionally. And so I just wondered if you could just go a little bit on and that. I'm also really fascinated with why a bank, why finance? Like, what is it about that was attractive?
So to the work, Amy, thank you for that question. This work, okay, so when you hear the term diversity training, right? It's people training. And I think, and so when we kind of take that lens and that approach, it becomes more of an inclusive, all-encompassing thing. And this is the work that we're talking about, right? It's learning how to effectively engage, communicate, build trust with different types of people. And no matter what group of people you bring together, there is going to be diversity. That is innate in who we are. It's focused on our differences. The key piece in learning how to bring people together is creating that inclusive culture where people from a wide range of diverse backgrounds can come together and feel safe and build trust across differences and all of that. So this work is really, and it starts with self. It's internal. It's deeply emotional. It's deeply personal. And it's difficult. It's not easy. You don't just take one diversity training and boom, you are now an expert. This is a lifelong learning process. And I always hesitate calling myself an expert on anything. Because when I step into that room, if I'm leading a learning experience or facilitating a conversation, I am learning right along with everyone else at the table. And so it's very important to step into this work with humility, right? And a willingness to listen. The way that I structure a lot of my learning experiences, I listen, I learn, and then I lead. It's very important to move forward in this work in that progression, right? To your question about the role of banks and financial institutions.
Real quick, can we come back to that? I want to
Sure.
In this segment, not going too far, but we'll start with that, with the role of financial institutions. And also, okay. I would like to talk about the strategies you think could actually make this happen in a way that could be productive. We're having a discussion today with Sui Lang Pinoke, and she is the Senior Vice President of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for Utah-based Zions Bank, and hopefully she'll explain how we can have more inclusive, more diverse workplaces that just make everything more productive and certainly provides an experience for people that can be positive in the workplace. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, speaking today with Sui Lang Pinoke. She is the Senior Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Utah-based Zions Bank. And, you know, as we were ending the last segment, Sui Lang, you mentioned that, you know, what is the role of how did you get to be in the case of this new job in the financials? Industry and at a bank, which generally speaking would be considered one of the more conservative work environments in our just entire business industry.
Thank you so much, Jason. And Jason, for the question, I want to start off by saying I am not the person that you want to come to invest your money. So it is kind of ironic.
Yeah, but you know the people that I work could know for to bank. Invest my money.
Exactly. And so I'm not that person, but I do know how to invest in people. And so with that said, I don't have a financial services background, but I absolutely believe this is exactly where someone like me needs to be at this particular point in time. Now, I want to reference a podcast. It was actually an interview on The Breakfast Club. They interviewed Byron Allen. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Byron Allen.
How about Byron Allen just blowing up his career
and
becoming one of the best media executives and most successful in the country.
Exactly. He's kind of big time.
Yes, he is.
I'm a huge fan.
He started out as a stand-up comic, by the way.
He did. Yes. He did. And I believe comedians today, Jason, are the most trusted leaders in America.
So many times. That's right.
Thank you, George. Exactly.
Thank you, George Carlin. And
move on to do such phenomenal, incredible things.
That's right.
And so he is a creative at heart. But my heart goes out to Byron Allen. He was describing a conversation that he had with Coretta Scott King, and he had purchased the rights to her story, which hopefully he will be developing a movie or a series around that soon. And he was talking about, they were talking about how to achieve true equality here in America. And they described four pillars. Number one was end slavery. Number two was end Jim Crow. Number three was achieve civil rights, which we started in the 60s, and I'm sure we will continue to do and fight for those civil rights throughout the rest of America's livelihood. And number four, the fourth and final chapter, was economic inclusion. Now, with that said, I also referenced Dr. Martin Luther King's most, and I think it was the most powerful speech he ever made, called The Other America, right? And it was delivered after his March on Washington, or that I Have a Dream speech. And sadly, it's the one that most Americans are unfamiliar with. But what he was doing in that speech was fighting for economic equality. And he was going to deliver, it was the Poor People's March, he was going to deliver over a quarter of a million poor people to the nation's capital. And guess what? Overwhelming majority of them were white. And so his fight, his legacy, represents much more than that racial justice lens. It was economic justice. And if you look at the history of America, since the beginning, 400 years ago, as we have progressed as a society in terms of social justice, oftentimes it was the economic bottom line that pushed us there, right? So as a capitalist society, the economy is generally money, right? Is generally what moves people, what moves legislation, what shifts culture, and ultimately will move the needle on the social, racial, economic justice as well in achieving true equality. And so I see there's a critical role that banks and financial institutions play in this big picture. So to see a bank, especially like Zions, and as you mentioned, Jason, one of the most conservative banks in the country, invest so heavily in diversity, equity, inclusion is a game changer. And I can, to myself, attest that, and I was literally on my way back to Washington when the recruiters reached out to me about this opportunity. And I think it's important to note that as well. I didn't apply for this role. They found me because of the work that I was doing in the community, because of references from other community leaders who had seen the type of work that I was doing. It is bold for a place like Utah. And that's always my approach when doing this work. I'm all about doing something that has never been done before, right? And doing something that is going to turn, whether it be racism or sexism, turn it on its head. And get to those hard conversations. Those are the only conversations I want to have. I describe myself as like a give it to you straight type of personality. And it's refreshing. Back East, in areas like Back East, it's the kind of the norm here in Utah. It can frighten people. It can make people very uncomfortable. But at the same time, I'm also feeling people are waiting for that. You know, they are hungry to get to the root of the issues and start to do the work. So I've been very thrilled to see that.
Can I ask you though, what you saw in the organization? Because they reached out to you, you didn't, and you said you're not really a finance person. What was it about their structure or that opportunity? Because sometimes those roles can be really unattractive because they're sort of, I feel like they put them out there as a way to shield themselves from, you know, a past, you know, a history of not being inclusive or, I mean, they're, some of these positions for diversity inclusion are almost set up to fail. So what was it about their structure or that opportunity that you thought, oh, I can actually make a difference? Like I am, this is going to
be. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, great question. Agreed. And I believe what you're describing is what we call performative measures that really don't work, right? Mm-hmm. I can absolutely attest to Zions Bank is not following that plan. They are literally coming to the table with sincerity. They are genuine in their ask, in their approach. They're very mindful and thoughtful about this work. And the biggest difference, Amy, is the leadership is fully committed. Mm-hmm. That first meeting with Scott Anderson, I basically knew.
Scott Anderson is the chairman and president of Zions Bank.
He's the president and CEO of Zions Bank. Yes. And he is truly a unicorn. You know, there's something that I describe, and as a woman of color, I don't know, Amy, if you've experienced this, but when you engage with men, there's something that I describe as like they see me, they'll either see me as an equal or they see me as being inferior, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have experienced both simply because of the arena that I'm traditionally operating in, which is politics. And so I'm constantly surrounded by white men, even in my faith community here living in Utah, there are white men that surround me. And so I've experienced both. Mm-hmm. Every white man that I've engaged with here at Zions Bank sees me as their equal, including Scott Anderson. And I felt it. I knew it. It's one of those unspoken understandings, is the spirit, is the energy that exists in that interaction.
It's definitely something you feel. I spent 20 years in sports. I'm not a woman of color, but as a woman, the whole gender thing is a different dynamic, right? So
absolutely.
You know right away that, oh, this person
if they,
is talking
if
to
they
me.
Respect they, you, if they respect you, if they or they trust you, you know it almost instantly.
Immediately.
Right?
Yes.
And that is how I have felt here working with leadership. In addition to that, they restructured this position to where I report directly to Scott. And
perfect.
That is and
that's
that was
so critical.
Literally, right? Yeah. It was part of my negotiations because I knew I wouldn't be able to do what is required to shift culture here if I didn't have that. I had to have a direct line to the number one. So that is absolutely essential for any organization. If they're serious about investing in DEI work, and really it's investing in people, investing in your human capital. The tagline that I use here at Zions Bank is building economic inclusion by opening opportunity, increasing access, and investing our capital. And when I say capital, I mean human capital, social capital, and financial capital. Money alone is not going to fix the problem here in America, right? It's the relationships. Oftentimes, social capital is much more valuable than the financial capital.
I want to jump in here real
quick. And the human capital, that's the people.
I need us to kind of close this up, but when we come back, I also want to ask you about the role of the media in DEI, just to get a sense of how what role we play and either in helping or hurting. Just a small role. We're speaking today with Sui Lang Pinoke. She is the Senior Vice President of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for Utah-based Zions Bank. And we're having this discussion that's kind of broad, but how do we change the landscape in business and in our workplaces around this country? She's Amy. I'm Jason. This is Voices of Reason. We are back with Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, along with Amy Donaldson. I'm Jason Lee. This episode, we're joined by Sui Lang Pinoke. She is the Senior Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for Zions Bank here in Utah. And, you know, I wanted to ask you a little bit about what role does the media play in this effort to develop diversity, equity, and inclusion, not just in the workplace, but just kind of all over, because it's a societal and a social change, right?
Absolutely, Jason. The role of the media is critical and essential. I mean, is referred to as the fourth estate, right, in any society. And it's important that, you know, the images, the messages, the programming that is displayed through the media, it's important to understand the influence that they have on our minds. Right? The media plays a critical role in shifting culture and mindset. Mm-hmm. And working for so many years in Washington, you see the correlation between the political arena and the media, right?
Yeah.
The more diversity we see in political leadership, and that has essentially been my passion for the past 20 years, diversifying political leadership and democratizing the media landscape, because they go hand in hand. Right. Oftentimes the media will cover stories on leaders, right? Mm-hmm. People who are doing big things, who are operating in that upper echelon of power circles, if you will. But the overwhelming majority of Americans, if we want to be informed about what's and provide an equitable picture of what America actually looks like, we should be covering stories at all levels of society. In addition to that, the media has power. And I've even said this in one of my trainings, the media has the power to elect our next president.
Yeah.
And people could easily argue that one side or the other.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that one of the things I noticed, I used to, when I first started 28 years ago at the Deseret News, asked them if I could do what at the time was called minority issues. I said, I just feel like I had taken minority studies in college and I felt like we needed to actually talk about these issues in our newsroom. And I found that before Jason got there, nobody really wanted to chat with me about them. So I remember bringing speakers in and learning. And one of the things I learned right off the bat was stop doing stories about the first black banker or bank manager.
Oh my gosh,
and when you're doing a story about finance, call a person of color to be the expert on that subject. That's the difference.
Absolutely.
Is that then over time, we begin to see people of color as authorities
across
on issues.
Across sectors. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I just wondered about, like, do you see that? That's 30 years ago. Are we getting any better?
Oh, I think we're absolutely getting better in diversifying. You know, who has the microphone? That is, I mean, that's power right there. Right. And I believe, okay, the wave of social media, the role social media and providing platforms through technology, right? For anyone, right? Oftentimes the media, there were gatekeepers involved, right? The people in positions of power, you had to have capital, you had to have connections, you know, that social capital was really critical to get into any of the outlets. I'm talking about traditional media. But now that we have social media, where basically anyone could just create their own platform, we are really starting to see the needle move in terms of diversity in the media. And that is so critical because oftentimes when those gates are closed to people, people of color or in lower socioeconomic levels within a society, there are other people telling their stories. And that is highly problematic. What is most valuable in a society is allowing people to tell their own story. That is why diversifying the media is so critical.
Isn't that amazing to me that they would be presumptuous enough to tell somebody else's story? And I think, especially when you're the majority culture in, as America has been all these years, you know, they feel as though they're empowered to do that or entitled to do it. Whereas when you see images, you can see images of the majority playing an ethnicity that doesn't apply to them.
But here's the thing. I think, Jason, I do this. I did it just during the pandemic when I went down to the Navajo Nation and covered the outbreak on the Navajo Nation. I'm a white person. And I tried really hard I've had evolution over my career, but to ask them how they wanted to frame this story or frame what they were telling me, because I don't live there. I leave the reservation. I come back up to Salt Lake and go to my house and live my white life. So it is, I think because we don't have diversity in the media, we have no choice. Like I did a story on Black moms and I really think it was one of the best things I wrote last year, but I'm not a Black mom, but it was their fear and their anxiety.
But you love Black women, which I give you a lot of credit for.
I know, but I mean, but I'm still not them. You know what I mean? Like, how great would it be if there was a Black woman on our staff who could do that story, who lived that life, who knew that fear? You know what I mean? I mean, you know, it would have been so, as good as mine was, it would have been that much more authentic and real. But that's our problem. If we don't diversify the media, which I've been, and you have as well, Jason's a huge advocate. We've been harping on this forever. It's not enough to do what I do. To love them and to try to understand and be as deferential as I can be, it's not the same. And that's what we in the media just don't seem to get. And I think it is better, but I see us having a hard time retaining women and people of color in the newsroom. And it sometimes does depress me.
So we have about 2 minutes to go. I wanted to get kind of have you follow up on that. What do we do to change that dynamic?
Well, I was just saying, I really appreciate that your perspective on that and you acknowledging that, Amy, as a white woman, right? In addition to what you shared, it's just important to have a diversity of lenses, right?
Yeah.
And there's one thing to have like a perception on something that, there's one thing to have an opinion on something. There's another thing to have experienced it. Right. Mm-hmm. I've studied racism or I've studied sexism in college. Right. That's one thing. But to actually experience racism in the workplace and sexism in the workplace or in higher education or whatever avenue.
Yeah.
It brings a deeper level of understanding of wokeness, you know, to use these common terms that we use that is going to shape the narrative of the story. Mm-hmm. Also gives authenticity and credibility to the journalist with those particular communities, right? And I'm just using your example of a Black woman, right? As if it were her interviewing another Black woman, right, on a Black woman's experience growing yes. up in Southern Utah. Like, yeah. that is yeah. going to just have a completely different level of impact, of yeah. Nuance and color to it than mm-hmm. if you were to do it. And it's nothing against your talent no. or yeah. ability.
I think that's right? my mistake, is thinking that somehow I have my own experiences I can write about that I feel exactly. I've lived, you know. But I
think, and so that's part of what's going to move the needle, though. Yeah. Is women like you, other journalists like you, acknowledging their role in the bigger mm-hmm. picture and giving the microphone to someone who may not have the opportunities or platforms that you've had access to.
And I know we're tight on time, but I want to say that as long as women are disadvantaged in media, which I feel they are, I think we mm-hmm. women are going to we're not going to help each other as much or in the ways that we should to make this happen.
So when we come back.
Well, and going back to, well, real quickly, going back to social media, though, that's why women are blowing up on social media.
Yes.
True. Literally.
Thank goodness they have another avenue.
It.
That's right.
Yeah, killing it. Because they don't have, there are no gatekeepers. There are no yep. gatekeepers. Right. So when the doors are open, right, they yep. have access, they're going to kill it.
Yeah. So when we come back, I want to talk to, because Amy mentioned this, why is it so hard for white-run organizations to recruit and retain minority employees? And hopefully we kind of make some... get an understanding of that. We're speaking today with Sui Lang Pinoke. She is the Senior Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Utah's Zions Bank. She's Amy. I'm Jason. You're listening to Voices of Reason. We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, speaking today with Sui Lang Pinoke. She is the Senior Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Utah-based Zions Bank. It's actually a publicly traded company and one of the larger banks in our area. It's a very large regional bank. And we wanted to ask you, going into this segment, you know, we don't see enough diversity in so many areas of business, particularly whether it's in media or in banking or in financial services. Why is it so hard for, generally speaking, white-run organizations to recruit and retain minority employees?
God, I really wish I had a short answer for you on that one, Jason.
You got about 8 minutes.
But
30 seconds.
It's a great question, and I think it's a question that... You guys are so generous. It's a question that all companies are asking themselves right now, right? What I want to say, okay, so there's diversity recruitment, and then there's creating an inclusive culture in your organization. I will say, and I can confidently say this, I've been in this role 2 months now, just over 2 months. Zions Bank is one of the most inclusive cultures, corporate cultures, that I have ever experienced. So I want the focus to really be on trust, value, high performance, and growth. If any organization can create that type of culture, you are going to naturally attract a whole host of people from all walks of life, right? And that is really going to speak to your retention. Now, when it comes to people of color, Utah right now, and I love... saying these stats to my friends back east, 1 in 5 Utahns identify as a person of color. Utah is second only to Washington, D.C. in terms of the millennial population that we have here. Utah has also been, the past several years, in the top 3 to 4 states in the country in terms of population growth. And one of the reasons that's leading to all of those statistics is we have a strong economy. Utah is known for our economic growth, right? We've got this growth here in the tech sector, financial services industry. I mean, we're doing really well. And people, especially people of color, will move for economic opportunity. What determines retention is culture, right? So with organizations in a state like Utah, their responsibility lies in driving that type of culture within their organization. But in addition to that, it's the culture in the community that matters as well. So you'll see people of color moving to Utah, you know, for economic opportunity, maybe 3 to 4 years down the road. They're like, you know, they get a feel for the Utah culture. And for a lot of communities of color, it's a numbers game. right? I mean, we want to live amongst other people who experience life like we do, right? And so, you know, people go to Atlanta or LA or DC or New York, Chicago. So they come to a place like Utah. I'm like, there's not a lot of Black people here. I don't know if there's enough Hispanic people, you know, but it is growing. And so recognizing that, right, as employers, right, you got to drive culture internally. And then it's the external culture outside of your organizations that also matters big time for communities of color, people of color. Zions Bank is investing in both. My primary role here is to drive culture. And I feel like we've already begun to shift the needle in just the short 2 months that I've been here. And not because, you know, I'm just this great, phenomenal person. And to your point that you mentioned earlier, Amy, you're talking about oftentimes people will hire a DEI leader and then expect them to do all the work, which is absolutely ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's unfair and it's short-sighted. The way Zions Bank has done it, long before I stepped into the role, is established an infrastructure, right, that crosses all levels of the bank and giving people responsibilities and roles to lead out on DEI, right? Mm-hmm. From the executive team, the number one, Scott Anderson himself, all the way down to the bank tellers, right?
Let me ask you a question,
local branches across
Utah,
Idaho,
and Wyoming.
Sorry.
Yes. I just really want to get this question in, and I know it's not a 30-second answer, and that is that I wonder, as you're contemplating these kinds of changes, though, what do you say to the coworkers you run into or the executives that you work with that say, well, I just want to hire the best person? I hear this a lot. It's the same every place. I just want to hire the best person. I don't want to worry about what color they are, what their background is, what their ethnicity is. I just want to hire the best person. How does that impede what you're trying to do?
Well, it really is education and a deeper level of understanding. Because I look at individuals and like myself, right? When they hired me, they hired the best person. Mm-hmm. They really did. And that's not to blow up myself, right? Mm-hmm. But when you look at individuals who have had to like fight through barriers, right? Whether they be social, cultural, economic, or whatever, something inside of that individual starts to develop, right? It's strength, it's resilience, it's fortitude, it's commitment, it's belief in self. And that is a highly valuable skill and talent for any organization in any industry.
But you might not.
So you have
no experience in finance. So why, you know what I mean? Like somebody else might look and say, look, she doesn't have a background in finance. So she's not the
best. Right, but that's not needed.
On paper.
That's not needed for this role. We have a whole host of people that have that area of expertise at the bank. What we don't have is people with my area of expertise. And that's what's needed to create an inclusive culture, right? When we identify value in different areas, bring all of that to the table, that is going to create a high-performance organization. One other piece I wanted to get to is the way that I've been envisioning the bank here. If you envision Zions Bank as a human body, right? The infrastructure that I was talking about earlier is the skeleton. Right, that gives your DEI strategy shape and form. Okay, the people that you recruit and engage to serve in these roles across the bank is the flesh of that body, right? And the third piece, I call it energy. And that's what I bring to the table. The energy is what gives.
Yes, you do.
It's the lifeblood, right? I know, I can be kind of animated here compared to some of my colleagues here at the bank, and it's probably because of the industry, but
I'm shocked.
But bringing energy, right? I mean, I have been as well. I think about implementing like live dance parties here at the bank and just to see how that blows over. But you know, people have been really receptive. You know, I feel like, especially in the era of social distancing where we're not engaging in conversations or you know, social gatherings with our colleagues like we used to, people are dying for energy, you know. But the energy is the lifeblood of that human body. Right. And without the lifeblood, you might as well be dead. Right. I mean, your strategy is just going to fall flat. So the lifeblood is the philosophy. It's the perspectives. It's the conversations that you're having. It's that custom designed curriculum that is being delivered in a manner that's going to resonate with people at all levels from all backgrounds. And so there are a whole host. I wish we had time. I could share with you all of our programming.
Well, we'll have you back. We'll have you back. And I want to bring this to life. Yes.
Yes. Yes. We have to bring it to life.
Yes.
Right. Are people dying to get into the and be a part of this stuff, or are they being forced to do it? Because, you know, looking at the environment across our country right now, if you don't do something DEI, you will be shamed, right? in that cancel culture, which I'm not a fan of the cancel culture piece.
No, we cannot. We aren't either. That's why we started the podcast. People.
That's right, because we want everybody to have a voice. Yeah. That's right.
Totally. Well, we cannot hold people at fault if they are simply not exposed.
And certainly
it's our
trying.
Responsibility to bring them along.
Sui Lang Pinoke, Senior Vice President of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for Zions Bank. Listen, I told Amy when I brought you on that your story is fascinating. You are fascinating. And thank you so much
for
offering
your
insight on
it. It is an honor to be here. Honor to be here. I appreciate you both.
Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about the show, please contact us via email at vormed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at adonsports and at jasonlee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or any of the places where you might find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.